Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Summer Olympics in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, are in full swing now, from gymnastics, swimming, track, and field to judo, badminton, trampoline, beach volleyball, with most playing in bikini shorts, one in hijab. There are the great stories, the continuing concerns about Rio, a pool turning from blue to green, dazzling feats of athleticism. This hour On Point, diving in, jumping in, sprinting in to the Rio Olympics. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you watching? Are you hooked? What's riveting you at the Olympics? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us now from Rio in Brazil is Shira Springer, Olympics columnist for the Boston Globe. Shira, welcome to On Point. Wonderful to have you with us from Rio.
Thanks for having me.
We'll hear later in the hour from Lulu Garcia Navarro of NPR from Rio as well. But with us right now from Tampa, Florida, Tim Burke, editor at Deadspin. Tim Burke, welcome to On Point. Wonderful to have you here.
Howdy, Tom. Good to be with you.
Shira, you're right in the thick of it. What has been the biggest, most amazing moment of your week at the Rio Olympics?
Oh, wow. You've got to ask me to choose. Well, I think I'd have to start probably with what I saw most recently, which was Kayla Harrison in judo. She is a U.S. judoka who successfully defended her Olympic gold medal in dominating fashion. She won all four of her matches by what's the judo equivalent of a knockout. And it was an impressive performance. She's an impressive young woman. And when asked what she wanted to do in the future, she said she wanted to change the world. And the most compelling part of her story is she was a victim of sexual abuse. Her first coach sexually abused her, and she's now going to use these two gold medals to go out and educate people about that and tell her story. So that was a really compelling emotional moment. And, of course, I've been able to see some swimming, some gymnastics, where the U.S. has dominated in both events. And then there have been other smaller moments that have been exciting. I also, in fencing, got to see a woman by the name of Ines Boubakari from Tunisia win the first women's Olympic fencing medal for the continent of Africa. And she used her bronze medal to basically say, listen, this is for Arab women everywhere, and they deserve a place in society. So some really compelling moments in the big sports, but also in some of the smaller, less, let's say, high-profile sports.
Kayla Harrison, quite a story there. Of course, she was, 4 years ago, the first American male or female to win Olympic gold in judo. Here she was last night, winning her second gold medal in women's judo, this moment from NBC.
Harrison is definitely on the defensive. Now she's on the attack. This is what she does best. She's 12 seconds away. Chameo now. Oh, it's on! And she's done it. Kayla Harrison, she is Olympic champion. That is amazing. The second Olympic gold medal.
There for American Kayla Harrison in women's judo. Tim Burke, what are you seeing watching from Tampa, Florida? I mean, in the run-up to this, it was all about Brazilian politics and their woes. We'll hear about that from Lulu Garcia Navarro. It was about Zika. It was about drug testing. Now that it's on, how's it coming across, Tim?
Well, you know, we hear this every 4 years, that the host nation is unprepared, that the host nation isn't going to get the games off in time. And they always do, right? And even though we may have had a little more hesitancy or concern about Rio, it seems that for the most part they've gotten underway. Now, yes, we've had some issues with some maybe sanitary issues. We had one of the athletes have to leave the games because it suffered from a toxic fever that it got from some kind of bug bite. Now, that athlete was a horse in the equestrian competition,
okay,
but that is still something missing from these Olympics. I too have been taken by Kayla Harrison, and the thing that really she is now the most decorated United States judoka ever, probably the greatest U.S. Olympic martial artist ever, and yet she has stated that, you know, her future is to go into firefighting and not, you know, a future in mixed martial arts.
She can come save me. She's got the moves. I'm pretty confident she'd pull me out of there.
Yes, absolutely. But, you know, the previous maybe most famous U.S. Judoka was Ronda Rousey, who, of course, went on to become, you know, now the most famous female mixed martial artist in the world. And Kayla Harrison has said, you know, that I don't think that's for me. In fact, I think she was quoted today as saying, I don't know if I'm cut out for a world where you get fights based on how pretty you are and how much you talk. And I think that's the future for a lot of Olympians. And so trying to capture their glory as they're achieving it in Rio is something that I personally, as a viewer, am trying to do.
I almost hesitate to ask, but sanitary issues, what are we talking about there? Green pool or something else?
I would say both green pool and something else. I don't know how to put this quite delicately enough, but there's a certain aroma to Rio when you walk about the streets here. Pass a waterway in particular, and you can smell sort of a sewagey, trashy smell when you walk by.
Is that in the Olympic events arenas as well, or be outside, Shira?
Well, it's adjacent to the Olympic Park. I'm staying not probably about a mile and a half from the Olympic Park, and got a good whiff of it last night when I got off my media bus. So it's in very close proximity to the Olympic venues. I think that sort of stands out, at least for among people who are here. I wish they had sort of smell-o-vision when you are watching the Olympics, because then you would really get the full effect of what it is like to be in Rio watching these games.
A reminder of how a not small part of the world doesn't have such buttoned-up sewage systems. But some of the issues, I mean, the green pool, it was interesting. You had the British Olympic diver Tim Daly talking to the Daily Mail about the diving pool, the fact that the water had turned green. They're algae, I guess. But here he is, Tim Daly, British diver, saying there may be some advantages to that.
I have no idea what the green pool is, other than if Shrek has been in the pool and had a bit of a swim. But honestly, I have no idea. Apparently the levels are safe to dive in. You know, when you're spinning around diving, outdoor diving can be difficult because the sky's blue and the water's blue, so you don't know which way is up. So now that the water's green, it makes it slightly easier to see where you are. So, you know, for divers, we're kind of fine with the green water, and I've seen way worse, trust me.
Trust me. Shira, what's the deal with the green? It's so bright on TV. Can't they just dump some more chlorine there and fix it up?
Well, they said they were trying to. I actually went to an IOC press briefing about the green pools, and they said they were trying. It's apparently some sort of alkaline pH imbalance that has occurred in the pool. Nothing harmful. They're saying two divers, and they were getting the chemical mixture right to turn it back to the, let's call it the TV blue that they like. But apparently we've had a couple of days of rain here, and that has caused delay in the chemicals they put into the pool into taking an effect. So they're saying that the rain has delayed the solution that they have in place. I don't know if that's exactly accurate, but that's what they're telling us at this point. There's an interesting way of sort of managing the bad news here in Rio, because there's been so much of it trickling out day after day.
Bad news, also plenty of good news. If you're just focused on the sports, here was American swimmer Katie Ledecky. It wasn't easy, but she won the gold in the 200-meter freestyle on Tuesday.
That was a really tough race, and it hurt really badly. Pretty sure that's the closest I've come to throwing up in the middle of a race, but I'm just so glad I got my hand on the wall first, and it was all worth it.
Almost throwing up, but hand on the wall first, and that's what it's about. Last night, American Simone Manuel became the first African-American to win an Olympic gold medal in swimming. Press conference after the 100-meter restyle, she talked about that history-making swim.
I'm super glad with the fact that I can be an inspiration to others and hopefully diversify the sport, but at the same time, I would like there to be a day where there are more of us, and it's not Simone, the black swimmer. The title of black swimmer makes it seem like I'm not supposed to be able to win a gold medal, or I'm not supposed to be able to break records. And that's not true, because I work just as hard as anybody else.
All kinds of records that can be set here, Shira. And there's one, or just a moment in history around race, but you can hear Simone saying, I want to swim right past that factor.
Yeah, and you know, I hope her words come to fruition down the road, because it would be nice to view her just as an Olympic champion, and instead of a black Olympic champion, which is sort of how she's being touted at the moment. And just to reference Katie Ledecky, I think what's been interesting, particularly in the swimming with her and with Michael Phelps, is the fact that you have these swimmers, you know, big billing before the games. Katie Ledecky was going to do extraordinary things, and both Ledecky and Phelps have completely not only lived up to billing, but exceeded their advanced billing. I mean, Ledecky is just dominating. She set an Olympic record in the preliminary heats of the 800-meter freestyle. She is beating opponents by 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 seconds. It is, you know, a rare dominance in a sport that is often determined by fractions of a second. And it is exhilarating and exciting, and everybody is sort of caught up in her success here, both Americans and those from other countries.
Tim Brooke, for somebody who's by no means a competitive swimmer, how close these races are is just amazing. I mean, it comes down again and again and again to tenths or hundredths or thousands of a second. How do you train toward those targets when you know just how narrow the margin of victory is almost certain to be? We don't have to. Shira, can you jump on that? Tim's line seems to have gone down.
Yeah, I mean, I think that how do you train toward events that are fractions of a second? I think what you realize with all these swimmers, particularly when you see them in the ready room, they have this camera in the ready room, which is where they sit prior to the races, is there is just an intense, intense focus. And I think now, going along with that intense focus, you have to have supreme confidence. You have to go into that pool believing that the tenths of a second, the hundredths of a second, are going to come out in your favor. And like Ledecky said, you know, this is the most dominant female swimmer now of her generation, and then some. And she was saying, you know, I almost threw up in the middle of my race. And yeah, you also have to have that ability to push beyond the envelope, that physical envelope, and literally almost make yourself vomit mid-race because you are straining so much to get that victory by the tenths or hundredths of a second.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Rio Olympics and all the action in the water, on the bars, on the sand, the track, in the city. You can join us this hour. Are you watching? Are you hooked? Are you crazy for Michael Phelps, Katie Ledecky, Simone Biles? Are you crazy for synchronized diving into that green pool, for rugby sevens, for that wild judo, that wild fencing? And what really grabs you at the Olympics? Is it the pure athleticism, the world records, the personal stories, the national anthems? Here was that moment last night. American gymnast Simone Biles, just incredible, 19 years old, 4 feet 9 inches, won gold in the individual all-round after near-perfect floor routine. Here's the moment of the final tumble from NBC.
At the end of this tumbling pass, Simone Biles may land among the very best ever.
Get her another gold medal, because she is the all-around champion, and in my mind, the greatest ever.
Everybody going crazy for Simone Biles. Of course, it's not just American winners just driving their countries out of their minds. Fiji won their first medal, and it was gold yesterday in the Olympics with their rugby sevens team. They beat Great Britain. It's the national sport of Fiji. They've declared a national holiday there in celebration. Here's the moment, courtesy of NBC.
To touch it goes Fiji, Olympic champions.
Gold medalist men's rugby sevens 2016.
13 seconds of tape at a huge moment in history for Fiji. Of course, it's not all glory. Things go wrong. Yesterday, an upset in canoe doubles. The second-ranked team in the world from Czech Republic capsized at the last minute. Again, NBC.
One more upstream, and that's good as well. Oh, no! Oh, disaster! Would you believe it? They were so quick through it and then got an edge and over, and that surely is the end of the dream. Four penalties, look.
Sometimes it's the end of the dream, but they're at the Olympics. So is Shira Springer, Olympic columnist for the Boston Globe. She joins us today from Rio. Lulu Garcia Navarro of NPR joins us in just a moment. We're trying to get Tim Burke back from Deadspin. He's been watching all this. Shira, the joy of the Fijians when they brought home that rugby gold in a national holiday declared. And I think I saw the prime minister there drinking the national drink out on the turf. I mean, that was full-on celebration.
Yeah, those are the kind of wonderful moments that you embrace and love about the Olympics. When Fiji gets its first Olympic medal in a sport that is religion in that country, and they, you know, celebrate. I'm sure it's not going to just be one day of holiday, but it's going to be perhaps a week before they get over this victory. You know, those are the great things, particularly for countries that hold a particular sport very dear, like Fiji does with rugby. And then, you know, on the flip side, I heard some of the upsets. There was a narrow sort of upset avoided here. The Brazilian men's soccer team got off to an incredibly shaky start, which I think bears mentioning. They tied their first two games, and Brazil was, you know, practically apoplectic about it. The idea that the Brazilian men's national team wouldn't advance in soccer.
Unbearable.
Unthinkable. Yes, yes, absolutely. But thankfully, they are into the quarterfinals. The coaches apologized to the entire country and said they were not playing up to the level that they know is expected of them. So hopefully all will be right in the world of Brazilian soccer as the men try to go after their first gold medal in that event. But, you know, talk about upsets. If they hadn't advanced to the quarterfinals, it could have been a catastrophe on some level for Brazil.
Everybody's watching, paying attention. Let's get our listeners in here. Susan in Columbia, Tennessee. Susan, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to comment about the overall Olympic experience. My daughter and I were talking just last night. We haven't been able to watch the events live, but we keep catching the highlights and the medal ceremonies. And we noticed last night, which was really exciting to us, that when an American goes up on the medal stand, if it's not someone you already know, it could be anyone of any race or ethnic group. It just seems like our American Olympians just are from all different backgrounds, and we just really thought that was really awesome, that our team, our countries, is represented by people from all over.
I mean, it really is incredible. I share your pride in that, Susan. Though at the International Olympics, of course, you see everybody from all over the world, but the way the U.S. Embodies that, just right there in so many athletes, is very cool to see. I think we've got Tim Burke back with us from Tampa. Tim, I don't know how much of the television coverage you're watching. How do you see the way NBC's covering this? Is it very it seems to be very American-oriented. We don't see that much of other people really highlighted unless they've got the USA on their shoulder.
You know, Tom, that's kind of a complaint that we hear every Olympiad about NBC's coverage, is that it's very focused on U.S. athletes. And NBC has a reason for that. It's because what their audience is interested in. We have a big focus on Michael Phelps and Katie Ledecky. And so far, because the swimming finals have all been in East Coast U.S. primetime, NBC's been able to air this stuff live, and it's been featuring a lot of U.S. athletes performing well and winning because we've been going beyond even what our expectations were. Katie Ledecky is just, you know, destroying people. Michael Phelps is 4-for-4 in golds at an Olympics that he's not even supposed to be at. You know, that they're focusing so much on U.S. athletes. Well, it's really hard to say that they're wrong for doing that because the U.S. athletes are returning. They're returning that value in winning.
Is that because Russia's not there this year, or that hasn't really kicked in yet because track and field hasn't really unfolded yet?
Tom, you have to touch the buzz on that.
Shira?
Yeah, I was going to say, I would say that the Russia factor really hasn't kicked in yet. It will in track and field. But I think this is just the U.S. doing exceptionally well. I mean, at last count, they have 38 medals, 16 of them are gold. So that's on their own. We'll see that medal total increase with track and field and probably increase more than expected without the Russians there. But in every other event, there are a fair number of Russians. I believe it was 271 athletes were actually cleared to compete in these Olympics after the doping scandal. So there are plenty of Russians to go around, and in swimming, where the whole doping scandal and, you know, Russia and their presence there has been a big controversy, particularly in the figure of breaststroker Yulia Efimova, who is a two-time silver medalist at these games. and many of her fellow competitors and even some of the male swimmers believe she shouldn't be in these games because she has previously served a doping suspension, a 16-month doping suspension for steroid use.
And of course, we saw American swimmer Lily King calling that right out this week. And when she won with gold in the 100-meter breaststroke, said it showed that athletes can compete clean, quoting her. She'd criticized Yulia Efimova from Russia, who'd previously, as you say, tested positive for doping. This from NBC. Here's the reporter and then American Lily King.
Do you think you made a statement on behalf of the United States and other athletes?
Yeah, I hope I did. That we can still compete clean and do well at the Olympic Games, and that's how it should be.
Is there a pall in some way over these Olympics because of the drug charges and how that's been called out, Shira, or not?
Yeah, I do think there is a pall because the World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA, called for a blanket ban of Russia. They said the evidence was overwhelming about the systematic state-sponsored doping, that they really couldn't reliably consider any Russian athletes, clean competitors. And they said they should all be banned from these games. And the IOC had an opportunity to make a tremendous statement by having a blanket ban of Russia, and they didn't. Instead, they tossed the decision-making over to the individual sports federations, and then there was an appeals process, and the IOC had the final word. And what you have are athletes who have been suspended previously for drug use, for doping, now competing in a variety of sports, and the clean athletes, the athletes without any drug use on their record or doping charges or suspensions on their record, are having to constantly answer questions about what it feels like to have these Russians competing alongside them when they may not be clean. So it's become part of the continual narrative of these games and will be even more so when track and field gets going in earnest, because there's going to be, of course, a lot of talk about the competitors who aren't there and how athletes feel about that.
We'll take a bunch more of your calls in just a few minutes here, but I want to bring Lulu Garcia Navarro in, South American correspondent for NPR, of course, and she joins us today from Rio. She's been watching maybe some from inside, but also watching Brazil and Rio as they swirl around these games. Lulu Garcia Navarro, thanks very much for being with us from Rio.
Great to be here.
How is Brazil, Rio, I guess, in the front row, taking on these games? Are people watching all over the place? Is national pride kicked in big, Lulu?
It's interesting. I think that there's two things going on. So I think on the one hand, there was a great deal of relief once the opening ceremony happened and it went well. And Brazilians saw themselves reflected in a positive light to the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And many of the Brazilians that I spoke to said that it was a real sort of watershed moment for them. They felt that all of a sudden things were going to go much better than they had, that they were quite afraid that things were going to be going much worse than they have. So I think Brazilians are watching these games, you know, with a great deal of interest. Of course, if you're inside the arenas, you've already heard all the reports of how boisterous they are. Brazilians love their sports. They love their team. There is a great deal of national pride here. On the other hand, there is, you know, all these other things happening around the games. Brazil's situation is extremely serious. There's an economic crisis here. There's a political crisis here. And that hasn't changed despite the fact that the Olympics have come to town. And that certainly is impacting people's lives here.
And as you've reported, Lulu, at the opening, the formal declaration of the games open, the interim president, Michael Temer, who did it, was actually booed by the crowd there in Rio.
Yeah, he was loudly booed, actually, and there's been protests within some of the venues against him, and a lot of controversy because the IOC and the federal government tried to shut those down. It went all the way, actually, to the courts here, and the court said that that was unconstitutional and that people should be allowed to wear shirts that were anti-government or hold up placards that are anti-government as long as they were not disrupting the actual events. And so it became quite a big deal here because, of course, you're having this moment right now where the former president is suspended. She's going through an impeachment trial in the Senate, and you have this interim president who's hugely unpopular, Michel Temer, and that has trickled into the actual events here. And what people say is basically, you know, yes, great, the Olympics have come to town, but there is something else going on here, and it shouldn't be hidden from the rest of the world.
What's life like in Rio during the games? And we see these eternally gorgeous shots of the hills and mountains of Rio and Christ 3D Redeemer up on the one great peak there, and it just looks so perfectly picturesque. And then NBC's got Ryan Seacrest down the beach talking about all that action. But what about life in Rio? Is it blocked off every which way, or is it going on more or less normally?
Well, I'll tell you how I was woken up this morning. Okay. I got a it's relevant.
Okay.
I got a message from a source that I had interviewed in one of the favelas, and in it, she had recorded how she was woken up, which was by heavy, heavy gunfire in her favela, and you just hear this absolutely shocking amount of shooting, smoke billowing into the air. It looked like something out of
what was going on,
frankly. Well, basically, what's been going on there pretty much every day. You know, there's two Olympics here. There's the one that you see on television. There's the one that, as you mentioned, you see Ryan Seacrest cavorting with models on the beaches, and that is Rio too. But there is the Olympics that, you know, 25% of the population live in favelas and impoverished communities. I spent time with them over the past few days, and they are seeing a very different type of Olympics. They don't have money to buy tickets. They aren't seeing tourists because the tourists have been told, even in the safe favelas, even in the ones that are well known, tourists have been told not to go there because it's unsafe because of Zika. And so they're really not reaping the benefits. And you have unprecedented amounts of security in the city, 85,000 security forces. But meanwhile, in these impoverished communities, you're having these, you know, massive fights breaking out between police and drug gangs. In this particular favela Alemão, which my source is from, five people have been shot in the last week or so. So it's a tale of two Olympics, if you will.
You talked to a tour guide there yesterday, saying it wasn't going so well for him. You're translating his Portuguese here. This from NPR, Lula Garcia Navarro.
E agora tá muito fraco de turista.
Tourism has been very weak. Many consulates told their citizens not to visit the favelas, she says. I think people were too afraid and we're seeing very few tourists coming here. It's very disappointing, she says.
She's not making out so extremely well here. What about the TV coverage in Brazil, Lulu? Do they have their own coverage of the Olympics? Does NBC have anything to do with theirs, or is that just to other markets?
No. Every country has their own rights holder, as they're called, and the one here is called Globo. And, of course, they, too, focus almost exclusively on the Brazilian athletes when they can, but there aren't that many of them. So, you know, they do seem to have a much more, universal coverage, if you will, than perhaps the kind of coverage that you're seeing in the United States. I actually want to speak to football and Brazilian football, and I'll tell you why, because one of your guests was talking about the huge controversy over the fact that the men's team has not been doing very well and how unthinkable it is. Well, there is an upside to this, which is the women's team has been doing extremely well. And so when you go out and you watch people watching the games and talking about Olympic coverage, they're now talking about women's soccer, women's football. And that is a sea change. You know, they're very proud now of their women's soccer team. And, you know, one of the most famous female soccer players in the world, Marta, is Brazilian. Mm-hmm. And she is finally, I think, getting the reception that she deserves in her home country.
I guess I have to ask you before we let you go about Zika. There was so much concern about it in the run-up to these games. Is it an active concern right now as the games are going on?
It's cold, it's wet, it's rainy. I think all along what the Brazilians were saying, what the WHO was saying, was that it isn't going to be a real concern. It's not going to be a huge problem. And so far, I haven't been in testing sites. I don't know, firsthand, but I know because I live here, there aren't a lot of mosquitoes around. So I would imagine that that is a concern that is less pressing than some of the other ones.
Lulu Garcia Navarro, South America correspondent for NPR, joining us from Rio de Janeiro today. Always great to talk with you, Lulu. Enjoy the games as much as you can. Watch out for the gunfire.
All right.
Thank you for being with us. Here's American gymnast Ellie Reisman's first event last night, the vault, courtesy of NBC Olympics. She went on to win the silver medal in the gymnastic individual all-round. Here you go.
Team final, she had great height, exploded off the vault, but that big hop forward.
So when you take a hop or a step, if it's less than shoulder width, it's a tenth. If it's more, it's three tenths.
Those minute gradations of performance that make the Olympic stories. Of course, she went on to win the silver. Simone Biles went on to win the gold. We'll come back and take your calls and talk a lot more with Shira Springer. She's in Rio for the Boston Globe. Tim Burke is with us from Tampa, Florida, watching there at Deadspin, the sports website. You can join us as well. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. With Rocket Mortgage, you can get approved for a mortgage in minutes using a phone or tablet. This completely online process uses cutting-edge technology to make getting a mortgage more convenient than ever before. Now you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs with the touch of a button without the frustration of digging through stacks of financial documents. Info at quickenloans.com/onpoint, equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the Rio Olympics and all the action in the water, on the bars, on the sand, the track, in the city itself. South Korea continues its domination on the archery range. Yesterday, Kibo Bae shot for the bronze from NBC.
Bronze medal here, an 8 or better for Gibo Bae of Korea. She's got it. She's got 30 out of 30. Gibo Bae's got the bronze medal for Korea.
And they'll take it. Golf returned to the Olympics yesterday after an absence of 112 years. Irish golfer Patrick Harrison was among the first to tee off, said he felt some jitters from NBC.
I'd say I was more nervous on the first tee than at any, you know, as much as I would have been when I played my first major. It's very exciting. I said it to the guys walking off, you know, now we're Olympians, nobody can take that away from us.
They're Olympians and no one can take that away from them. Shira Springer is with us from Rio, Olympic columnist for the Boston Globe. Tim Burke is with us, editor at Deadspin, following all the action there. You can join us as well. Are you hooked? What have you loved? What have you not? Are you dodging the sports news all day to keep the mystery at night? Are you inspired to get back to the gym? Are you still thinking about that oiled-up dude from Tonga in the opening parade of athletes? Christina in Accomack, Virginia. You're on the air, Christina. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I don't want to throw water on all the enthusiasm, but I don't like the booing of the swimmers, and I noticed that the Russian swimmer was close to tears. We don't know.
Who was booing whom and when, Christina? I missed some of that.
Well, there was some I can't remember what the swimmer was, but there was some noise from the audience that there was booing when the Russian swimmer participated. And I thought it was really kind of unsportsmanlike. And I know we're going to have the this coming week, there's going to be a lot of talk about the doping and everything. And I just hope that that the individual athletes are not booed, because we don't know what kind of pressures they're under. And it just makes America look a little... We have enough examples of bullying in this country.
Did you think it was mainly Americans booing? Was that your impression, Christina?
Well, I did hear that. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
And I stand corrected if it's true.
Let us pick it up. I really appreciate your call. Shira, what can you tell us about that? Were you...
Yeah, I was actually there.
Yeah.
So I think I know the specific example that the caller is talking about. This was when Yulia Ifimova, the Russian swimmer I spoke of before, took to the pool deck for her breaststroke races. And it wasn't Americans doing the booing. It was the entire crowd, which is, for obvious reasons, mostly Brazilians, but a good chunk of representatives from Australia and China and Japan. So a multinational crowd in many respects. And they were booing her because she is a woman with a 16-month doping suspension on her record, in addition to the fact that she was found to have used the now-banned substance meldonium earlier this year. So I understand where the caller is coming from with regard to the pressures that these Russian athletes may have faced with systematic state-sponsored doping. They may not have had a choice in some respect, and I get that. But we're talking about now a woman who has been twice caught using illegal substances that enhance performance. And she is one of, for lack of a better phrase, the poster children for the doping and the fact that Russia was allowed to enter athletes who clearly are not clean competitors.
I mean, Tim Burke, what do you think about that? I mean, there's a sportsmanship issue here, and our caller doesn't want to hear the booing. I've got to believe that if it's athletes doing their, you know, clean best, people are not going to want to boo, but maybe they're booing the use of drugs itself, which has really become a yoke around the neck of the Olympics and more.
You know, it's really tough, Tom, because the Olympics are sort of the last completely acceptable to all people venues for sort of jingoism and, you know, putting your country up against the rest of the world is claiming to be the best. And there's... And
but is that what this is? When it's an international crowd booing, then it doesn't seem quite so flag-wrapped. It seems more about, let's try and keep this clean.
If it were a U.S., let's say it's not U.S., let's say French or Great Britain, the athlete is Russian. It was a Russian state-sponsored doping program, and that makes it very easy for everyone to turn against them. I mean, we all saw Rocky IV.
Yeah.
this is a trope that has existed in geopolitical and international athletic competition for decades.
Well, I get it, but it's more than a trope. It's extremely widespread doping as well. So, I mean, I know both those that energy is in there, the sort of Rocky caricature, but still, wouldn't it be nice if it were clean?
Yes, it would. But, you know, and I found it very interesting that Lily King, who sort of led the charge in this case, said that she didn't think her own Team USA teammate in track and field, Justin Gatlin, should be allowed to compete because he also had experienced a drug suspension.
Yeah. Yeah. David in Williamsville, New York. David, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, one and all. Just wanted to say that I think we should focus a little bit more on the unexpected, the long shot, the underdog, the little guy. And to say, as much as we appreciate dominance in certain countries and certain sports, let's just love Fiji.
Yes, I'm hurdler, right there. Yeah.
The hurdler from... the Southwest Indian Ocean that ran on beaches and they had no track.
Yeah, of course.
Can we please, like, maybe less the conspiracy theories and things about, you know, doping, and just say there are amazing athletes out there that rise above.
David, I'm all for it, and we're celebrating them here, right here today. Fiji, certainly, and Koreans and Irish golfers, and right on down. I mean, it really is a global event, though we see it often through a televised, anyway, through a national prism. But who doesn't love those stories? And I appreciate your call. Omaha, Nebraska. Jim, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Despite Michael Phelps' performance in this year's games, do you think he's still a good role model for young people despite his... two DUIs. I think he had one as recently as 2014, especially when you compare him to Simone or Katie. Thanks.
Appreciate your call. Tim Burke, what do you say? Yes, we know there's been some DUI and some marijuana use over time, I guess, by Michael Phelps. On the other hand, this is many years of his life here, and he's come back and performed like crazy. We get into the role model, the Wheaties box kind of controversy here. How do you think about Phelps?
Well, I'm not sure if Michael Phelps wants to be a role model in the first place, and it's his right, I think, to say that he doesn't want to be. Obviously, being the greatest swimmer of all time puts you in a position where you have some responsibilities for your behavior, and I think he's kind of taken responsibility for that. He's a different person now, and the person that you see, he's engaged, he has a child. The way that he talks in interviews— He seems a little more aware that he is a global sport icon. And so I say, you know, yes, it's the DUIs are very bad. That he likes to smoke weed is, I think, in my opinion, a little less bad. But I think that there's the Michael Phelps that we see in 2016 is someone who's purely doing this on his own terms, and he has nothing to prove to anyone, and yet he's going out there and beating everybody anyway. And so I think that if that's the legacy that he leaves us with, I think it's a pretty good one.
awfully impressive. Here he was last night. He won his fourth straight gold medal, 200-meter individual medley. Talk to the reporters poolside here from NBC.
I would have loved a regular world record, but you know what? Winning four in a row, when the announcer said that, I had a really hard time holding it together. So it's obviously a very emotional event for me, and something that, you know, it's very special. You know, being able to win 22 Olympic gold medals, something you just dream of. And you know, I've said this before, but I'm just living a dream come true.
Shira Springer in Rio. He sounds pretty chill there, but I was really taken back watching his face as the national anthem played as he stepped on the gold medal platform there. I mean, the emotion still runs deep, and can you imagine all these years after his first appearance being able to pull that off? It's just incredible.
Yeah, I was going to mention the same moment, which was Michael Phelps on the medal stand. He looked incredibly emotional, almost near tears. And I know he says this is his last Olympics. He's 31. But there's a small part of me that believes he may be back for 2020 in Tokyo. I think I think he's having such a good time and really soaking it all in at these games. And I just think he may have trouble saying a final goodbye. And the thought may creep into his head a couple years from now, maybe I'll give it a go again. You know, just a couple events and see, you know, at 35 if I can add to my record number of golds.
For anybody who missed it, it's kind of incredible. That's 13 individual golds for Michael Phelps, a record that has stood since. Am I wrong?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was just going to mention the ancient, breaking the ancient record.
Yeah, it stood since the year 152 BC when Leonidas of Rhodes, at age 36, won his last three golds for his total of 12. That's what you call a long-standing record. Ellery in Somerville, Massachusetts. Ellery, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment on, so last night after Michael Phelps won the 200 fly, I was a little bit bothered by the fact that NBC continued to just follow him around to the point where they had a camera counting down the time since, you know, he had last swam till his next swim.
Yeah.
And instead of focusing on other athletes who are about to swim, you know, I know Michael Phelps, of course, is amazing and he should be watched and we love to watch him swim. But the Women's 100 was coming up and there was all sorts of cool events and they just continually focused on him walking through back hallways, you know, doing a cool down swim, etc.
I know just what you mean, and I felt torn about it too. On the one hand, when you break a record that stood since 152 BC, that's something. On the other hand, there are a lot of great athletes out there. Well, hey, you know, it won't last forever. I appreciate your call, Ellery. Julie's calling. Julie, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm calling to add in that as much as Michael Phelps and Katie Ledecky are doing amazing things, one of the sports that's really, really not getting the attention that it deserves is rowing. It's a pretty understated sport as it is. There's not a lot of individual glory in the eight in particular, but our women's eight is absolutely crushing it right now. They are going for their 11th consecutive gold medal title. They have been undefeated for 10 years now in world championship and Olympic events. They have totally crushed it in their opening heats, winning by many lengths of open water, more than six seconds, which is
incredible.
The equivalent of what Katie and Michael are doing in swimming when it comes down to hundreds of seconds. And no one's really talking about it. There's athletes who are doubling up in another event from that eight as well into the pair, and they are also winning by similar margins. And so is our women's single sculler who rose right out of Boston. And I don't really see anybody talking about it in the local or broader media coverage.
I'm really glad you put it front and center right here. We'll celebrate it right now, Julie. I mean, Shira, Tim, who's following rowing, American rowing, and the women in particular?
Well, I am. I will say this. I am headed out to the lagoon tomorrow morning for both Jevi Stone's race in the women's single final, A final, and I will also be taking in the women's eight final, which is scheduled for about 40 or 45 minutes later. I had the opportunity to talk with Jevi Stone at length when she was and go out with her on the Charles River in Boston during a training session. So
awesome.
At least from this writer's perspective, very much aware of both the success that the rowers are having and the athletes who are having that success, both in the single and in the eight. And it should be an exciting day. Perhaps both Jevy will get her first Olympic medal, and I think the U.S. women's eight looks like it's on its way to gold.
Lots of eyes on rowing from countries all around the world, and here maybe on the American women's eight and Jevy Stone. Absolutely. Joe in Marquette, Michigan. Joe, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Actually, it's weird that that last caller was talking about rowing, because I'm actually a rower, and I've been watching that, too.
Good. people are out there watching. They're celebrating. All right, we got it.
Yeah, so my actual comment was I was very excited earlier this week to hear the very first gold medal of the games went to an American shooter who's doing the air rifle target shooting at 10 meters. Because shooting is one of those sports that doesn't get a lot of coverage in the news, and then it's also controversial to boot. But it was exciting to hear about it since it was the very first gold medal of the games that it got widespread coverage, and to remind people that shooting is a real sport and America is very good at it, and it should be celebrated.
Absolutely. Did you say at 10 meters, Joe? Did I hear you correctly?
I think that was the very first one. I know there's a lot of others, but that was the first medal of the games, and I think that was the exact event. That was the must have been the first event. I'm not exactly clear on what the schedule was that day.
All right, but big ups for shooters and American shooters bringing all that talent to the Olympics and not ignored there for a second. One more right here. Jane in Braintree, Massachusetts. Jane, our time is short, but thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Tom, I'm so happy to be on the radio with you. I love this program. I wanted to just make a comment about my grandson who tried out for the Olympics this year, and he did not make it, but he's been trying out for competition for years and years and years, and his parents, the silent winners of the Olympics, the parents who are so dedicated to each one of these kids who's trying out, and they should be commended.
That big mountain of wonderful athletes who just don't quite make it to the games, but all their effort has raised the mountaintop up high.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And he's won scholarships to college because of his prowess at a swimmer. And I just wanted to say, for all the Andrews in the world, we are supporting.
Jane, we got it. Bravo to all of them. They make the Olympics that much more special with all of their effort. Wow. Shira, you're heading out to the lagoon. And what else are you watching the rest of the day?
Well, I think the lagoon is on the agenda for tomorrow. I'm going to watch some swimming. And then one event I'm particularly looking forward to is the women's marathon on Sunday morning.
Track and field coming up right in front of us here. I'm just reading they've closed that green diving pool. All right, maybe no more Shrek in the water. Shira Springer with the Boston Globe in Rio. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Tim Burke at Deadspin out of Tampa, Florida today. Thanks so much, Tim.
Thank you, Tom.
Go Olympians. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.